Hey guys, what is going on? We are in the zone. This is episode 196 today. I'm here as always with Giancarlo Aulino. And we got to start it off today with, we're looking at some of the lines for today, for Saturday. This is actually the first official Saturday slate for the NHL. No, there's no more Don Cherry, but guess what? Still hockey going around. We got to keep it going. Aulino, there's a lot of games today. We got to go over quite a few. I'm looking at these lines here on FanDuel. Which ones stand out to you, and which ones are you feeling today?
Yeah, I think the Arizona-Boston is a little disrespectful. looking at Arizona plus 265. I know they're in a year where they're kind of transitioning and going into a new stage of their development, but some of these young guys I think could surprise some teams. I know Boston did well early on, but like, I wouldn't put it past Arizona to make this interesting. I don't think it's going to go over 6.5. I think that's a stretch, but I can see this being a low-scoring game where we're going to see some bright spots from guys like Clayton Keller to step up for Arizona. So I'm going to go Arizona and overtime.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's there's the first hot take of the day. I think if you do that, that's like, you could even sprinkle it and you make a lot of money back. So I think that's a smart play. How about the Buffalo Florida game? I was saying to you before the pod went live that I like Buffalo today, man. I've seen the first couple games, you know, they're looking pretty good. What do you think about Buffalo? I know I'm fading your boy, Bobrovsky there.
I can see Buffalo getting it done. Like, they're hosting Florida, so their crowd's going to be alive there, energetic, and Florida's coming in. Like, Bobrovsky, he's generally a slower starter. Like, even though he has good stretches during a year, last year he had a pretty good year where he bounced back, but he's always had that thing around him where, like, he's going to take a while before he really gets going, and I think Buffalo could capitalize on that, so I like this, that Buffalo gets a win. I'm surprised they're plus, especially that they're the home team, but like, I know Florida got some reinforcements there with Tkachuk, but they also lost Mason Marchment, and their team's still trying to find another identity and be that contender. So I got Buffalo winning this too.
Yeah, I think, like, you look at even Buffalo, like, I think this is a year for them to prove that they're not in tank mode anymore. Now, a lot of teams out there, like the Chicago's, the Phillies, the Montreal Canadiens, those teams, I think, are still in that situation. But you look at Buffalo, man, that, you know, they added a couple big names. You know, you got Alex Tuck in the trade. You got Rasmus Dahlin, another year of development. The first overall pick in Owen Power is playing this year. So, and dude, Craig Anderson doesn't want to hang him up. He's still going strong. So I like what you said there, especially that they're the home team. I like Buffalo in this situation here. But you talked about it as well earlier, Vancouver, Philly looking like a trap. Do you really think Philly can pull this one off?
I think it's going to be tough. Like, I think Vancouver's going to get this done. Like, Philly's another team where they're also finding an identity. Like, Tortorella comes in, he's cleaning house. Like, some other guys are probably getting different roles on the team. Provorov's going to probably block a lot of shots this year again and have a decent stats year, but plus minus is probably going to kill Philly. And goaltending, like, they have to find confidence in their goalies. That's been their biggest for the last couple of years, but it's a negative point of just the development of guys like Carter Hart, and this has gotten back even to when Bobrovsky was there, Brizgalov. Like, you need to really identify who's going to be leading your team, and you can't just go down on them when they have a bad stretch. So I think this is going to be similar. Torts is going to probably get them going next month, like, once he gets his guys in order and finds a style of play that suits them. But Sanheim's also coming off a contract extension. He'll be ready to go. But I still like Vancouver wins this. I like their team. I like the way Demko is going to carry them. And I think this is going to be an offensive night for them.
I like it as well. You know, I just want to go on to the Devils and Red Wings. I really like the way that both of these teams, man, they've completely changed their teams. When you look at the Devils the last couple of years, a lot of NHL fans, probably yourself included, have called the Devils one of the most boring teams to watch. So now you get Jack Hughes another year. Jesper Bratt has all of a sudden turned into a fantasy option. Dawson Mercer's looking like a pretty good you know, sophomore type player. What do you think about this game, man? Because, like, you look at the Red Wings, they got Vrana, they got Perron, they got Andrew Kopp in the offseason. The Red Wings at plus 150 on the road. I don't know, man. I really like that value, but New Jersey's a tricky team right now.
Yeah, New Jersey's a tricky team, and they're also figuring things out with some of the new additions. So I think that's why they got, like, Detroit as a nice, like, underdog win. It's not too crazy, like a plus 335 or something like that. I think it's respectable to the Devils, but I'm going to go the Devils taking the loss. I know that's your team, but I think Detroit, one of the few wins they'll get this year, as they're developing into a nice little offensive group, and the Yzerman just continues to find these diamonds in the rough. I think Detroit gets this, but I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Like, I can see a 5-3, 5-4 win. I wouldn't be surprised, but I got Detroit getting the win here.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you look at the over, it's 6.5, and it's at minus 132. So they probably do see a high-scoring game, but I do like the Red Wings there, and I am a Devil fan. So moving on, I really like this game. I've said this to you before the pod. We have Montreal and Washington, and look at that value there. Plus 270 for Montreal, and even plus 1.5 at plus 110. Dude, Washington, we saw the other night against the Leafs. This is not the same Washington from 2017. They're without Nicholas Backstrom. They look old. They look tired. I think Montreal here with this value, I think you have to take it at this point.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, you can't count Alexander Ovechkin out. I think he's going to have a hot night here. The game against the Leafs, the Leafs kind of got lucky there. I think Washington were creeping up on them, and the Leafs had a big night. So I think Washington's going to come in more motivated, aggressive. I like the way Mantha actually played. He's finally being more aggressive and taking some more shots and not just settling around the net. So that's something I think Washington really needs if they're going to be that contender again. And I think Ovi is due for a nice night. I got two goals for Ovi tonight.
Hey, you know what? That's got value in itself. You know, now we got to go on to the game, obviously, that we're looking forward to. The Sens and the Leafs, the Battle of Ontario. Minus 230, man. It's kind of a lot. I don't know if there's going to be a lot of people betting on that. Maybe you put it in a parlay, but what do you think about this Ottawa team? This is going to be the first time we're actually going to see them live in the regular season. DeBrincat has looked pretty good to start the year. If you're like, for tonight, Aulino, let's say you're betting on this game for the Leafs, are you scared, you know, going up against this Ottawa team?
I think with this rivalry now that Ottawa's got some pieces and they got some draft picks and they're not tanking anymore, I am, because every rivalry game can go either way. It's going to be a coin flip, just because the teams see each other so often. The fan bases look and circle this on their calendar when they're playing each other. So there's extra motivation on the players. They don't want to be on the wrong side of it, being dominated and just a one-sided loss. So I think Ottawa could make it interesting. We're going to see some aggressive plays here, maybe a couple scraps in this game, but I like the Leafs value. I know it's going to be something we're going to have to add something else in there just to make some positive gains on that, but I got the Leafs winning because they're coming off that 40th home opener for Joe Bowen, a milestone for him. They had everybody in the fucking arena. They dished out the whole season budget, it seemed like. They got The Rock in. Bernadeschi was there taking pictures with Matthews, so it was a star-studded night there at Scotiabank, and it was a nice win there. They got the fans pumped up, and I think they're going to carry over and take care of Ottawa.
Yeah, I like that. Moving on, we got the Lightning and the Penguins. This is going to be a very fun game, I think, tonight. You got Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov. You know, you got Crosby, Malkin. You got so much offensive ability here. It's only at 6. Now, I don't know if that's like they expect Jari to stand on his head and get like a shutout. It is a back-to-back for Tampa Bay, but I'm really liking the Penguins here in this spot against Tampa Bay, who, again, yesterday, they dominated Columbus. It wasn't necessarily close the whole game. It was a high-scoring first period. What do you think about this game? Do you think maybe you take a period prop, or would you just take maybe Pittsburgh or Tampa on the money line?
Yeah, this one I would probably go a little safer just because I think it can go and turn into something where, oh, so one of these lines just changed here just now. But I think one of these could go either way in the first period. I think both teams are going to come out, and Tampa just coming off that game where it's a back-to-back. I just think Vasilevskiy should start early on in the season back-to-backs, because you're still in a like off-season, preseason type scenario where a guy's just getting his timing down. I think right when the season starts, if you have a back-to-back, you should get your starter as many of those as possible, and then you throw your backup in and take the load off. So if Vasilevskiy doesn't play tonight, I think Pittsburgh win this. I won't say easily, but I do see them coming out on top, probably like by two goals. Like, I don't see it being like a 4-0 win, though.
Nice. Now we got, of course, Anaheim and the Islanders. Islanders favor quite a bit. It has gone down a little bit the last couple minutes, but I really like the Islanders in this one. I think even you want to go over 5.5. I mean, Sorokin's a great goalie. You have Gibson, who's also a great goalie, but I think the Islanders have something to prove here. You know, Brock Nelson's a great goal scorer. Anders Lee, whenever he's in the lineup, can get a goal or two. And Trevor Zegras and Mason McTavish, man, these guys are no jokes. These are guys that come into this lineup and immediately impact. I don't know what happened to Troy Terry. This guy has become a completely different player the last couple years. Who are you taking in this one, man? This one looks a little bit more deceiving than I think it should.
Yeah, this is a coin flip, and that's why I would not do a money line on either team. I would look at the goals, and probably best to do that one, because I think both of them are in a similar scenario. Like, the Islanders overachieved a couple years ago, and now they're in a situation where they're relying on Sorokin to come in, and they're giving him starts. He's going to be the guy, and some of their players, like Barzal, has had a different role since signing that extension, and you look at Anaheim, they're in a new era now with Getzlaff retiring. So I think we're going to see some guys emerge out of this and establish themselves as leaders on their team. And I think the even over-under, like, they're both at the same value. I would go over 5.5 for this, but I would not pick a winner on the money line.
I like that. Yeah, I agree with you there. And then, of course, this one's another landslide here. The Blues are finally playing their first game of the season. They haven't played a game yet. It's been, what, 4 or 5 days now. They've had a lot of rest. They've had time to look at their roster. Kyrou and Buchnevich, Alino, and even Robert Thomas have been absolutely tremendous surprises for me with the Blues. Blue Jackets lost Line A two games ago. Goudreau scoring his first as a Blue Jacket yesterday. I think the Blues run them over here. I think the -1.5 at +100 is the play for me here.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately for Columbus, because it's exciting when you have Line A extend and you get Johnny Gaudreau, the top free agent available to come to Columbus of all teams. It's like, for your fan base to see that, I think, is really optimistic, because not everybody looks at Columbus like that. And to get two guys who are in their prime, or in Line A's case, just like really coming into his prime, and a proven assist guy who can create opportunities for all his teammates. I think they were expecting a big year from Line A, maybe like over 50 goals, and now that injury is going to slow things down. But I think Gaudreau might get a goal tonight, maybe 1 point, but I agree with you. I think it's going to be a blowout.
Yeah, and then the Kings and Wild, man. The Wild are just this is an unpredictable team. The Kings have also been unpredictable. I think this is the one game I'm staying away. I don't think I'm really doing anything here. But if I really had to, I'm probably going to take the under 6 goals. I don't know what's happened with Jonathan Quick, but he's all of a sudden kind of gotten his groove back, hasn't he? He's looked pretty dominant the last year and a half. And I think this is a bounce back spot for Marc-Andre Fleury as well, where you look at 2 games ago, he didn't look good at all. I think he actually got pulled against the Rangers. They lost 6-3. I just think this is going to be a low scoring, maybe a 3-1 game, but honestly, Alino, I'm not touching it.
I'm with you. I'm not either. Just too many uncertainties there. Like, Quick is, I love the way he's playing. I've been a big fan of his. I like the way he kind of bounced back from that label that he was kind of washed and just running out the contract and just going to retire. It looks like he still has plenty of game left in him. The contract, obviously, the 10-year, $5 million at the time looked like a steal when they were winning cups, but I like how he is turning things around. I think this is the last year. So if he, the way it's going now, he can extend and sign for a cheaper deal and be a bargain. So I got Quick having a good game. I got Fleury having a good bounce back game. And I see this going under the goal total.
I like that too. But then, of course, we only have four games left. Quickly going to go through them. Nashville, Dallas, they've already played a game this year. Dallas looks like the better team, but Nashville's a team, I'll lean over, where they can kind of sneak it in with a goalie like Saros. I mean, +1.5 at -250. No one's taking that, but I don't know if I really, again, this is like, for me, this is like the Kings in the Wild. I think this is too close of a call here. If I really had to, I'm probably taking Dallas at home, as it's very hard to win in Dallas, but Nashville's another sneaky team like the Wild and the Kings.
Yeah, Nashville, like, I don't know what it is with the fine goalies like this, but when they had Pecorine, the poor guy was playing like almost 70 games a year, earning that money, and all Saros, the same thing, over 60 games a year. Like, they got to find a backup, like, just take the load off some of these starters. Like, they're going to just run them way too much, and come playoff time, they're going to be logging in like close to 100 games, and if you want to make a deep run, I think you need a nice backup like what Colorado was doing last year with Kemper and Frank Coase. I think Nashville would be a big benefiter in having somebody to take the load off of Saros. So I don't know how this line is going to look as the day goes on, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of crazy things happening. Like Dallas might get closing on the favorite, but for it to be 102 for Nashville and 122 for Dallas, I'd get the bet in right now and just get it up, because I think by tonight they probably might both be at +100.
I like that. Now, of course, we got to go to Calgary and Edmonton, and everybody's looking forward to that. We're going to have the privilege to watch it tonight on the doubleheader. To me, dude, honestly, like, I'm looking at it, -105, -114, the over 7. At +116, I have to, because we saw in the playoffs, man, both these teams are very, and I mean very, aggressive. They I don't know what it is. They lose their cool early on, and the amount of penalties that both these teams take when they play each other. And, dude, both these teams have one of the best power plays in the league. You have McDavid, Draisaitl on the other hand, Huberdeau, Lindholm. You know, Tyler Toffoli's no slouch either, so I like the over 7 if I had to make a play here. Even maybe Calgary on the money line. I don't know.
Yeah, this is going to be a wild game. I got over 7 for sure. And this is going to be a rough one. I guess Kadri's first taste of being in the Battle of Alberta. Hopefully it doesn't get suspended early on in the year. McDavid, Evander Kane. Like, Edmonton have a lot of weapons, but I just think you're going to have to rely on the other guys like Zach Hyman and Nugent Hopkins have a big game, because McDavid is going to probably get his goal and assist, but they're going to be marking him like crazy. He's the guy they're going to be checking, finishing their check even on, like, just to set the tone. So I wouldn't be surprised if Calgary get the win, but I think Edmonton's bottom six forwards are going to play a big role, and we'll probably see an overtime win for the Oilers.
You know what would be funny, Alino, if you could bet like Kadri and Lucic to get into a scrap at like +15,000. I would love that. That would be an interesting play. But I agree, man. Over 7, I think, is the play here, no doubt. Then we got the Blackhawks and the Sharks, and you already know what I was saying before the pod. I like the Blackhawks here, man. +115, the Sharks coming off a hard-fought game last night against Carolina. I actually had a bet on Carolina to win in regulation, and that came in with 2 minutes left. James Reimer stood on his head. I don't like the Sharks this year. I think they're one of the worst teams in the league. I'm just going to be flat out. I think even the Blackhawks are one of the worst teams in the league. But when you have a day's rest, Alino, that can make a big difference. So I like the Blackhawks in the spot tonight.
I'm going to go with the Sharks just because I think if they do start James Reimer again, I think he's going to have a nice bounce back night. I don't know who's in net for Chicago. If it's Mrazek, who knows how that can end up. He can make like some crazy saves on one-timers, but he can also let in four goals, and this could go bad real early. So I'm going to go San Jose just for now until we find out if Reimer's playing. But even just their offense, like, I think Hurdle, Meyer, they're due for another big night. And Carlson, like, hopefully he gets it going, because he's going to, with Burns gone, he's going to be even more of a focal point on the back end. So I'll stick with San Jose, but I would not be surprised if this is a wild, high-scoring game.
Yeah, me neither. And then the last game, we got the Battle of the Expansions. We got Seattle and Vegas. Seattle at plus at home. What do you think about that line?
Yeah, this one is kind of close to that Dallas game, just because I think they're giving both teams some respect. Like, Seattle was doing, it looks like they could do well. Shane Wright, if he starts getting going on the team and starts turning heads, maybe they can be a team that challenges for a wild card down the line. But I'm still going to go with Vegas. I think Phil the Thrill is starting to get more comfortable on that top line with Jack Eichel. Eichel's going to be more aggressive with his shots. We can see what Mark Stone does on that second pairing. They have a lot of depth, and I think they're managing lines and just seeing different combinations, who plays good with who. Eichel Kessel seems like a good one right now, and you can have Mark Stone come in on that second line, and then the power play put them all together. The goalie situation is a little question mark still with Leonard out, but I still got Vegas getting the win.
Yeah, I think this is a close game. I mean, like, one or two goals, I'll say it's decided by, maybe even an overtime we might see, but I think I'll give the edge to Vegas slightly just because of the way that Eichel's looked. I think Eichel, before the season started, he was going, dude, like, eighth round in fantasy. I think that's flat-out disrespectful. This is a guy that's just been phenomenal, you know, his whole career, and dealing with the issues that he had to go through, specifically with his health, and the training staff didn't want to necessarily help him out. That was absurd. So you see a motivated Eichel here in Vegas, I think. I like your play here. I like Vegas here tonight against Seattle. But now we got to move on, man. We got to start talking now about the basketball season. Actually, you know what? We'll talk more about the Leafs actually to start. First night of the year, Alino, we saw the Leafs lose a tough one to the Montreal Canadiens. And then, of course, the other night we saw them beat the Caps. They're 1-1. Both games decided by one goal. What have your initial thoughts been so far to start the year? And who has stood out to you as, you know, maybe the most surprising player?
Yeah, this start to the year was something I'm sure everybody thought that first game they should have won. Didn't really go their way there and pissed a lot of people off. Like, this is already game one. We got 81 more of these disappointments to go, but I like how they turned it around in their second game against Washington on that back-to-back. But I'd like to see a little bit better of, like, a finishing touch from this team. Like, Matthews is the guy. He's always going to score or be on the score sheet. Teams that are going to be looking at him, marking him, especially the year he had last year. I'd like to see that kind of ability from Matthews to always be a threat and not to really slow down, like, be more consistent there on the power play, kind of like what Ovechkin was when he was, like, scoring all those goals early in his career. And Marner, I'd like to find a role for him. Like, if they're going to commit Sheldon Keefe to putting him on defense a few times here and there, I'd rather them just commit to it right from the start. Throw him in on the back end and right from the start of the game and just go all game with him there, 25 minutes, create, do that Kale McCarr role, and see how it goes. Because I think once they put him at the back halfway through the game, it takes off some of the momentum that they built, and it goes either way. So I like to see more commitment to these guys' positions and lines.
I like that. I mean, if you put Marner on the back end, he could play him a car type role. That completely changes the dynamic and landscape of the Leafs. You know, we do have weapons that could go on the wing. You know, a lot of people say that the Leafs don't have the necessary weapons, but Kerfoot, to me, has always been that intriguing player. Yeah, you know, he's not great defensively by any means, but if you put him on a line with Austin Matthews, he could probably get a goal in a game. I think Yarncroc is another guy, too. I've loved what I've seen from him, actually, the first two games. And what are your thoughts, Alino? Like, Nick Robertson was phenomenal in the preseason, and they send him down. Do you think that was specifically a waiver, so he doesn't go on waiver situation, or do you think they're just still kind of developing him? Because what I saw in the preseason from Robertson, he looked ready to go.
Yeah, I think it could be a waiver thing. Maybe seeing how he does early on in the Marlies, see if he can get his point production up down there to make a stronger case. But I think eventually he'll be back on the team once they figure out, okay, who's going to stay here? Is Aston Reese going to be a mainstay in the lineup? Is he going to be a guy we healthy scratch once in a while? Can Robertson play that bottom six role and not take away from his offensive abilities? So I think they're going to try him on the Marlies in different roles in the first, I say, five games down there. And if he starts really doing what Kadri did during that lockout year for the Leafs, where he came back the second half after the Marley stint and was one of their top players, I think that the Leafs can have something here and Robertson could be a mainstay in the lineup.
Yeah, I like that take. I think specifically a player like him, he needs confidence to really get going, especially he's a goal scorer. So we've seen it with so many guys in the past that, you know, when you're a goal scorer and you don't have the confidence, it's not going to go in the net. So I think with Robertson, it's more specifically confidence. I think confidence is key, and I think they're very taking their time with Robertson. And maybe even because I think when he comes to the Leafs, he has to immediately be inserted in that top six role, as we've seen in the preseason. He just scores at will when he's when his confidence is high. But I just want to quickly now talk about the Leafs goaltending. We saw both of them first two games of the year. Matt Murray looked pretty good to start, but then, of course, you know, we saw a couple unbelievable snipes from Caulfield and Anderson, glove side. And then we saw Samsonov, man, against his old team. He didn't look good to start, and then he kind of just woke up. So between the two goalies, Alino, who of the two has you think is the better option, and who do you think is going to be the starter by season's end?
Yeah, I thought when that trade went through, I'm like every Leaf fan. I'm like, why Matt Murray? Like, Kemper's available. He's a guy that just won a cup. He went for $5 million. Like, why make a big trade for Matt Murray? It seemed like a good start. He wanted to be on the Leafs, more motivated, bounce back from the injuries. But once they got Samson off, I think that was a sign that if Murray doesn't get going here, I think Samsonov's going to steal his job halfway through the year. And I think by the end of the year, Samsonov will be the starter and into the playoffs. He's only on a one-year deal that's cheap. And whatever happens, I think they can fall back on Murray going forward. So I think they got Samsonov probably penciled in takeover some point during the year.
Do you think that would upset fans, though, Alino? Because, like, a $4.6 million backup just sounds awful.
Yeah. That's what Dubas signed up for. I think this is like, if this doesn't work, he probably knows he's getting fired anyways at the end of the year. So it's probably like, screw it, let's go for it. Samsonov's the guy and Murray's the guy. So I think this is just going to give him maybe a buyout clause. I don't know if Murray could be bought out, but maybe like retained salary if they want to trade him next year. But I would go one season. I would risk it on Samsonov. If he's hot, I would go Samsonov as a number one going into the playoffs and see if he can win us a round. Never mind the cup. I just want the round. That's it.
We all just want the one round, man. We haven't been able to get it for so many years. But, you know, what have you thought of Willie? Because Willie, to me, has looked like probably the most dominant offensive player so far to start the year, which is hilarious. Because we have Marner and Matthews on the team.
Yeah, like how Willie's kind of like playing like it's a World Championships out there. Like every time he plays for Sweden in the World Championships, he's flying on the ice. He's taking so many shots a game. Different and player. I think, yeah, like for the Leafs, like where the hell was this William Nylander? When I was watching the World Championships in the summer, I'm like, okay, that's odd. He's
I think Alino froze, but yeah, no, like William Nylander is a type of guy. This was absolutely phenomenal. I think, you know, you talk about William Nylander, he can get 70 points, he can get 75 points, and he's at $6.7 million. This is a guy in William Nylander that I do think everybody out there watching this, like William Nylander is no slouch. This is one of the best bargaining signings that I think we've seen in a long time. You look at a guy like Nikolai Ehlers on the Winnipeg Jets. He's a very similar player. there's just so many other guys out there that are getting paid more than Willie, and they don't have the production that Willie brings. So I'm not really surprised that William Nylander has been one of the best offensive players to start for us. I think we need him. We need him to be that third guy. We need him to be that, you know, underrated. I think other teams, when they look at Willie and they look at, we have to guard Marner and Matthews, I think Willie is just so far underappreciated that he could sneakily get you 3 points in a game. And then finally the other team will say, oh shit, we got to guard that other number 88. He's a pretty good player too. So I really like William Nylander, man. I think he's been absolutely phenomenal. I think 80 points is definitely an outlier for him, and I think he could easily get it just the way that he's been looking so far this year. But as we wait for Alino to get back in here, I just want to quickly talk more about the basketball. The NBA is now finally coming back, and it's coming back in 4 days. I'm really excited for this season, everybody. I think LeBron James, this is year 20. I love Kevin Durant. I think now this is going to be, I think, 2 or 3 years after the injury. I think he's going to be motivated to be one of the top MVP type players this year. We have a couple young up and coming MVP candidates in Ja Morant. You even look at Zion trimmed. He looks like a problem. And even Luka Doncic is looking to get his first ever MVP. Really excited for this season, boys. I think even Philly is another team that we should be looking at. Joel Embiid and James Harden have been absolutely phenomenal. Arguably been looked at as the top five duo in the NBA, as they should be. Just two absolutely phenomenal players. So I really like the way the NBA structure has been the last couple of years. The East and West does seem fairly equal. We've seen for the longest time, specifically when, you know, Tim Duncan and the Spurs had that dynasty, the West was the dominant conference for the longest time. Even they had Kobe Bryant in that conference. Dirk Nowitzki was in that conference. Steve Nash. A lot of just absolutely phenomenal players were there. And then the East was kind of, they had your pick and poison type of teams. They had the Cavs at times. They had the Celtics at times. The Heat as well. But now it's looking like you have like 6-7 teams in both conferences that could surprise some teams and even win the NBA championship. So I absolutely love the NBA season, the way it's landscaped, the way the confidence for all these teams coming up, even Atlanta getting DeShaunte Murray, I think is going to change the landscape of the East. Charlotte is a team where they were looking good for a while, and now all of a sudden, you know, LaMelo Ball is hurt. They got rid of a couple big-time players. Miles Bridges' situation is definitely a hard pill to swallow for Charlotte fans. But the one team that I really am looking forward to this year is our Toronto Raptors. I think this is a team. You have Scottie Barnes, another year in development. Pascal Siakam from February on was probably arguably a top 10 player in the NBA. Yeah, you know, a lot of guys out there definitely will argue that I'm insane saying that. But, you know, Fred VanVleet had his injury problem last year with his hamstring. He looks shredded. He looks leaned out. He looks motivated to have a bounce back. Gary Trent Jr. as well. So we have Alino back finally.
Sorry about that.
It's okay, man. We're just quickly talking about Willie, and now I've transitioned to the NBA, man. Just talking about how both conferences, man, they're just so level-headed. It's so equal. There's so many great teams out there. And I was just going to say to you, Alino, out of all these new teams, these new up-and-coming contenders in both the West and the East, who are you most excited for?
Oh, yeah, that's a tough one because – I think a lot of people would look at Portland, just like some of the trades they made. I think the Pelicans for sure.
Oh,
with,
yeah.
Just Zion coming back, JV, Ingram, McCollum. I think that's an exciting team to look for. I think the Pelicans will be in the top three. I know it's a hot take there, but I'm going to go with Kawhi Leonard. I think the Clippers are going to be the top seed, and our guy Kawhi is going to make a strong case there for MVP. John Wall, like, if he can come back and play somewhat close to what he was doing before he got injured, I think it could be an exciting year for the Clippers.
Yeah, I love that. I think I agree with you. There's a lot of teams that were there a couple of years ago and they had the big injury. Zion didn't play last year. Kawhi didn't play last year. Jamal Murray hasn't played in like 2 years. So there's a lot of guys coming back from injury. It's going to be a fun season for sure. But now moving to the Eastern Conference, which team to you stands out? I love the Raptors situation. I think this is a very undervalued team. Another team, Alino, that I think could surprise is the Atlanta Hawks getting to Shanti Murray.
Yeah, I think Atlanta is going to be a playoff team again, that similar to a few years ago when Trae Young went off in the playoffs. I think Atlanta could be that team that everyone looks at as a threat. Boston, okay, with Malcolm Brogdon coming in, I think they could have similar success. But I think if you're Jaylen Brown, you're probably like, you're going to trade me for KD after what we did to them. I think he's a little pissed off. He has something to prove. The Raptors, I love them with Scottie Barnes another year. OG, I think, is going to have another strong year. I think he's going to have a breakout season. And I'm not going to count out the Chicago Bulls with DeMar DeRozan again. If Lonzo Ball comes back after January, going into February, he can turn things around there. But I think DeMar is going to have another strong year for the Bulls. And obviously the Bucks, I think, will be there. And in terms of another playoff team, are you counting the Nets out with Ben Simmons? Do you think they're all going to fight with each other and all demand trades? Do you think they can coexist?
I think the Nets will make the playoffs. I think they won't be a top five seed, though. I'll say maybe 6-7.
Yeah.
But, Alino, I do like your point. Like we saw last year with Harden, Kyrie, and KD, it didn't work out. Ben Simmons is a little more vocal than he has been in the past, so maybe that won't work out either. But I'm optimistic. I'm a huge KD fan. I really want him to strive. And I think he could have a big MVP-type year, too, if he just focuses on the stuff on the court, not necessarily stuff off the court. I think Brooklyn could be fine. But, Alino, how about the Cleveland Cavaliers getting Donovan Mitchell? Do you see the Cavs finishing top four?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about the Cavs. That was a big trade, too, because a lot of people were thinking Donovan Mitchell was going to go to the Knicks. I know the Raptors were lurking, but I don't think they saw it as a deal that they would probably benefit from. They probably asked for too much, kind of like what KD's trade rumors were. So with the way Cleveland was able to get him was really sneaky. I liked it. No one was really talking about Cleveland in the discussions like that. So I completely forgot about them. I think they could maybe be more than a wild card team or fighting for that play-in round. So Cleveland is going to be a team to look at for sure.
Yeah, I absolutely love – dude, I love – like I was saying, I love the competitiveness in the NBA now. It's well-structured. It's looking like it's going to be hard to make the playoffs, specifically in the Eastern Conference. I remember there was a post by Bleacher Report. It was like the Raptors, the Bulls, the Hawks, and I think it was the Cavs. They said one of these teams will potentially miss the playoffs. So it's going to be a fun, exciting year, I think, in the NBA in terms of competitiveness. And I got to end it here, Alino, with, you know, we saw what happened with Green and Poole. Poole actually just got a huge extension, $140 million for 4 years. Guy cashes out, what a beauty. But, you know, I was seeing in preseason, man, Russell Westbrook doesn't look too happy in L.A. Do you see really affecting the Lakers season again, or do you think AD and LeBron could hold it down and make the playoffs?
Nah, I think I'm going to go negative with them. I think this is going to be a complete drama-filled year. I would put a reality show on that and at least make some money off it from the Lakers. I think Russell Westbrook is just going to take everything personally. I think he was pissed off that he wasn't dealt. He's still probably mad about just everything going in the media the way it was, how, oh, they're going to trade him and buy him out. They didn't really see any value in him, and they're going to trade him for John Wall. I think he's taking everything personally, and he's going to make the Lakers regret it for not at least respecting his abilities and his contributions to the sport. So I got this team finishing probably eighth or ninth, going in the play-in round and probably losing in that first game.
I love the narrative with AD, how it's changed. He was like a top five player 3 years ago, and now nobody thinks he's good. I love it. But I'll ask you one last team, the Timberwolves. What do you see them doing now getting Rudy Gobert?
Yeah, that's a strong looking front court. I like it now. Like, it takes some of the load off Towns, where he doesn't have to be that defensive monster in the paint. He can just focus more of his distribution, scoring. And Gobert doesn't have to be that scorer either, like he was in Utah. At times, it was like, okay, he's got to score some more points here, take the load off Mitchell. He's on a roll now where there's so many other guys that can do that for him. He just can play his game, get the rebounds, just be a defensive monster. And I think Minnesota could be a team that maybe challenges in the top five. I don't think they'll be a team that right away is going to be a top two team, top three team in the league. But I think they're built for the playoffs. Regular season, I don't think so. But for the playoffs, I think that's going to be a team they're mostly as a threat. But regular season, I think they'll probably load manage some guys and won't get the best of their offensive strengths.
I love it. Also, Ali, you know, we got to start talking now about wrestling. We got WWE, which we saw Extreme Rules. That was a pretty damn good pay-per-view. I mean, we predicted Ronda winning the title. It was going to happen. You know, Matt Riddle beat Seth Rollins, which as well we thought would happen. But here is the big, big thing from that pay-per-view was to close it out. We saw Bray Wyatt make his return. Wow, man, I got goosebumps watching that entrance. That was insane. What did you think about the entrance? What did you think about Bray's return? And what do you see from Bray Wyatt moving forward?
I'm not going to lie. When that signature thing went on the bottom of the screen, when Riddle was celebrating with Cormier, I was a little pissed. I'm like, they just had all these teasers out for what's coming at Extreme Rules.
Yeah, the trademark sign, yeah.
I'm like, what's going on here? They're ending the show like this? What the fuck? And then after they had Bray come out, but it just shows that maybe they made the wrong choice when they released him last year, because look how over he was, the crowd. It showed that when you put vignettes out and build suspense for it, even though there was a good idea, 90% sure that it's Bray Wyatt, they still played the suspense game up until Extreme Rules, and the crowd showed that they loved him. The pop he got when he came out, you couldn't even hear when he came out and said, I'm here, like, you couldn't even hear that, and the camera was, like, right against him. So that just shows how loud the arena was, and I think it was a good moment for WWE, this new management group, and a new era, I think, for Bray Wyatt, like, a nice moment for his career.
What do you think about his promo on SmackDown? Because we saw him come out as Bray Wyatt. Just thanking the crowd. He looked very emotional. Like, he looked like arguably the top baby face in the company with that promo. And then all of a sudden, again, that vignette comes on and saying, yeah, don't worry. Come follow me. The past is the past. Don't worry about the future. Do you see WWE going with like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type situation with Bray? Or do you think eventually this is just going to lead to him feuding with Roman as a top face in the company?
Yeah, I think that they're going to do this long-term with Bray. This Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing, that's kind of like what they were doing with The Fiend, how he'd come out and he didn't want to really fight people when he was dressed in the sweater and the Firefly Funhouse. He was just waving at everyone like, hi, everybody. Ramblin' Rabbit, and he had all the dolls there, and I think this is going to be something similar. When Bray's coming out like that, it's a more vulnerable version of Bray. And then when that mask comes up on the screen, it's Bray feuding with himself, I think. Every week, I think we're going to see another side come out. Because his Twitter thing was like Wyatt or Wyndham 6 and the group that they're all talking about, Wyatt 6. So we're probably going to see somebody new come out either every week or every couple of weeks and join them. And I think this will eventually lead to maybe even Royal Rumble. I would say they push it up until then, where it'll be revealed that it's a group or a stable of six different characters all related to Bray Wyatt. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go with that. And I think after WrestleMania, I'd see Bray maybe feuding with a new WWE champ at the time, will probably be Cody.
Oh, I love that. I think that would be absolutely phenomenal. I've been hearing, dude, for the longest time, specifically since Liv Morgan was laughing after she lost to Ronda. Is she going to be in that feud, in that faction with Bray Wyatt? Because I think that's a perfect fit.
Yeah, I think it would have been a perfect fit, too. Like, Alexa Bliss was great. She was able to do a lot of things with that character. But I think Liv Morgan would have benefited more if she went with Bray, because Alexa Bliss was already established as a champion at the time. So I think this is another like possibility. Maybe both of them can join Bray if they want to go in that direction. But I think Liv Morgan has a lot more to gain if she joins Bray. And I don't know what it would do, though. Like, what do you do with Alexa Bliss? Because it kind of seems like her character's out on the outs there with WWE. And it doesn't look like she has a lot of direction. Do you put them both with Bray or you go just Liv Morgan?
I think I'd go with Liv Morgan for now. She's been the hotter superstar, and you said it perfectly there. Alexa Bliss, since she's been injury prone, I want to say the last 4 years, she was dominant, man, from 2016 to like 18. She was one of those top five women on the roster, and now it's like there's just so many that are arguably better than her, and she's lost her spot in the card. But I don't know, man, with Alexa Bliss moving forward. Is she like going to be a tag team type girl? Is she going to, like, it's funny because, dude, Alexa Bliss and Carmella to me are intertwined. They're both in very similar situations, both former women's champions and then now, and Money in the Bank winners and now nothing. So I think Liv Morgan does need it more. I heard also rumors that maybe we're going to see Bo Dallas come back and be a part of this this family. What do you think this would do you think Braun Strowman could be another guy that could, you know, be with Bray? Or do you think they kind of ease off with that because he's just fresh off a return as well?
Yeah, I think if Braun Strowman joins Bray at some point, I'd hope it's like right at the end. Like, I think if he joined him right away, it would be like, okay, is this a Wyatt family? Like, you just brought him in to be this big top baby face. But I think if they go long term with Braun, maybe have almost just absolutely squash Braun because it looks like that's a few they're going with. And you can have Bray pick up the pieces and show him, like, you know what? You need to be with the family again. I would like to see, like, I know Baron Corbin is not really doing much, but if he were to go with Bray, maybe that would freshen up his character. Another guy like Bo Dallas, I think, would have been perfect. He should have been there from the start when Brody Lee went to AEW and they needed something for all those other guys. I think Bo Dallas would have been perfect. And I think it would be a shame if Eric Rowan isn't a part of this at some point. Like, the poor guy absolutely was so over as a heel with Daniel Bryan when we were there in Toronto at that show. Like, those guys were the top heels in the company. Eric Rowan gets a win over Roman clean. And they did nothing with the poor guy. They gave him like a spider. And I just feel so bad. And goes to AEW, got pops all the time. And I think it would be a nice story for Eric Rowan to be involved in this program with Bray.
Now, before we talk about AEW, there's just so many things going on in WWE. What is, to you specifically, what is the most intriguing storyline? Because to me, dude, I don't know what it is. I've always been a big Sheamus guy. I'm very intrigued to see what they do with him these next couple of months because he has been red hot.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Sheamus should have won the Intercontinental title. It was a shame he didn't, but they're probably saving it. Maybe WrestleMania he takes it, or maybe he continues his feud with Gunther and he costs Gunther the title and Ray wins it. But there's so many storylines going on now where, like, this time a year ago, maybe it got stale and like everyone was just focused on the Roman program, whatever he's involved in, whether it was Brock, Edge, Cena. Now you have so many different storylines going on that has people invested. I think that was what was lacking and missing from the product the last few years. And now you got Ray and his son, like Dominic, getting all this heel heat every week. And you can have Ray go and push that to WrestleMania. You have Brock coming back and attacking Lashley. And that looks like it's going to be a big feud going forward. So I think there's a lot of storylines going on and it's keeping you entertained for the full show rather than, okay, this promo is going to be in the third hour. I'll tune in the third hour and screw whatever's happening the first two. Even The Miz and Dexter Lumis. I don't know what the hell they're going to go with that. But
it's been like a month now.
They're having a match, it looks like. So that one is starting to ramp up too.
Yeah, like I completely forgot about Lesnar and Lashley, that situation. But what do you think about Lashley and Lesnar and the way that kind of folded? Like, you see Rollins just the best heel, you know, saying, I thought you were a soldier, come fight me, and then he beats him. Like, what do you expect from Seth Rollins' title run? Because is it going to be Kevin Owens? Like, who's going to be the guy to go up against Seth Rollins, you think?
I think it will probably be unpopular opinion here. I think the Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins feud is going to continue in some way. Like, I think this is going to end kind of like the Seth and Cody one, maybe a Hell in a Cell match, and that's what finally ends it. So I think Riddle will probably take the title off him in the long run, but I think they'll give Seth a long run with it just for what he was able to do the last couple of years. And I think it actually helped Lashley the way he lost. Like, I know Lesnar came out, just hit him with an F5, but he hit him with an F5 German suplex, and still Lashley was strong in the match, where Rollins had hit him with everything just to get the win. So I like the way they booked Lashley taking the loss, and it still makes him look strong going up against Lesnar in a non-title match.
Who do you think's winning that match? Do you see Lesnar taking it over Lashley, or do you think Lesnar's different now? He's going to give someone else a win. Do you think Lashley gets the best of him? Because I think, dude, honestly, if you book this properly, Lashley could be a megastar after this.
Yeah, I agree. And like, we saw the Royal Rumble when Lashley got the win. So he got the first one over Brock. I think they're going to give Brock the win in the second match. And I think the third one could go either way. But I think this is going to be a storyline that goes up until probably day one. So depending on whatever they have this match, maybe it's Lesnar versus Lashley at Crown Jewel. Give Lesnar the nice payday. And then Survivor Series, they go in different matches, or they're probably on the same team and they have to coexist. And then after, it leads to something else where Brock's off TV for a month and they build up for the day one pay-per-view. So I got two matches hopefully out of this. And I think Lesnar might go over on the second one if they do something with Gunther at WrestleMania.
I like that. The build, you know, obviously there's always a long-term build. I think Gunther has options for Mania. I've heard Drew, I've heard Lesnar, I've heard Sheamus again. I've heard that they just want to continue to go with that. Maybe a couple months down the line, they kind of ease off with that feud and then they ramp it back up. Maybe Sheamus eliminates Gunther in the Rumble or something, and then that escalates again. But now we got to go on to AEW just very quickly. It was here in Canada for the first time ever. Alino, you had the privilege to be there live. What did you think about it? We saw Sean Spears come out, you know, do an awesome promo, talk about how he's been off for quite a bit. We saw Bryan Danielson go up against Y2J, Chris Jericho. We just saw so many different moments. We saw Orange Cassidy even win the title against Pac. Just what was your favorite moment watching AEW here live in Toronto?
Yeah, I went to the Rampage event, and what I think AEW should have communicated with the fans was AEW Dark was 2 hours. I thought this would be like 1 hour of Dark from 7 to 8, Rampage from 8 to 9, and that would be it. I was in for a surprise. AEW Dark started at 7. Then once it went to 8, I'm like, okay, are they starting Rampage? What's going on here? Some people actually left after Ricky Starks' win, so that's not really the best of looks. But overall, I think the Rampage was strong, entertaining for the fans. I like Dark, how they had a lot of their top names there. I think AEW Rampage, what I didn't like is how heavily edited it was on TV, because Ethan Page's entrance, he had one of the biggest pops of the night. They didn't even put the entrance on the edited version of Rampage. And I think it pissed a lot of people off who were there. And it was a shame because the guy was so over in Canada and they didn't put it on the broadcast. And I think that's something they really need to change, just how they edit it, time management of Rampage when they tape it, and just how it comes off on TV, because it didn't really do it justice of how over he was. And I think the way they ended it too, with FTR getting the win and all of a sudden the Kingdom just come out, and it didn't really seem like the reaction was what it was live. And I think they kind of missed out on that. Just someone who is watching it and not live, it kind of was a bigger deal live than what it was on TV.
I like that. That's always good, man. When the live is better than the broadcast, that's you're going for the experience, right? So what did you think, though, moving forward? Like, Orange Cassidy, man, beating Pac? Like, is that a smart move for AEW after all the backstage shenanigans going on?
Yeah, with Orange Cassidy, too, his new entrance, when he comes out, he has a title in a backpack. takes out the title, barely lifts it, just the most relatable character, we'll say, in AEW today. Just can't be bothered. It's just too much energy. Goes around with the fans, just gives them like the hand like that. Doesn't even shake their hands. It's I know a lot of people don't get the character, but it's entertaining. I think that's what you want at the end of the day. And Danhausen's another one that was over with the fans live. And I think that's what they need to do. If they want to get their audience more than just a hardcore like wrestling fans and just expand it more, you need to have those entertaining segments. And I think with Orange Cassidy being champion, it could do that. But going forward, I think they need a strong like heel. Like Pac was that for a little bit. They need to find someone else to replicate that. So like at least this title isn't like the 24/7 title on WWE.
I agree with you, man. I think if there's one guy I think that should really go up against Cassidy and kill him, I think is Miro. I think he should just go out and just beat the shit out of him, and that's it. But how about MJF, man? This guy, he's looking – I thought, you know, like a couple weeks ago, it looked like he was borderline going to turn babyface. Do you think AEW is really looking to book MJF as a babyface moving forward, or – do you think it's just all for just a little, you know, it's just him lying to everybody again and he's just going to win the title and be the top heel in the company?
Yeah, I think maybe right now they don't want to commit to it, but I think eventually they have to. Like every time he comes out, fans are going crazy. They're cheering him. He's even trying to get the heat on him again, like during his promo. So I think eventually it's going to be inevitable. He'll be their top babyface, and I think he'll benefit from it. Like, I know he wants to be the heel that everyone hates and gets out of motion, but for his career, I think him as a babyface will work, and I think he could be AEW's biggest babyface because he was been there for the start.
Yeah, I like that too, man, because, like, Moxley even said he kind of has to take a vacation. He's been doing it. He's been, you know, he's been working, you know, since Punk went down with the injury. I just think, you know, Moxley has been the guy. He's been the guy that has carried it. And I think eventually MJF is going to have to be the guy that carries it as the top face. So, but with that being said, this is In the Zone. Alino again, you know, I don't know what happened. I think he oh, there he is.
Back here.
I was just going to say, I don't know, I think we're done here, but Alino, you have anything else to really add with AEW?
Yeah, just what I think going forward, what they need to do, like, I know they got the storyline going on there with Matt Hardy now joining the firm, like, his contract was on the line there with MJF, or not MJF, Ethan Page, and now it looks like they're all Private Party and Matt Hardy in the group. I think this is a way to bring Jeff Hardy back into the fold. I think that's one of the signs that I took from Rampage is that we're probably going to see Ethan Page going on Matt every week and Stokely. And then after Jeff Hardy makes a save, and we'll see Ethan Page go with Jeff Hardy. But do you think it's too soon for Jeff to come back, or do you think enough time has passed and he should be back in the fold there?
I think based on what we've seen the last couple months with AEW and the backstage stuff, I think, you know, he's a pro's pro. He's been doing it for 20 plus years. I think he knows exactly where the company is at. I think, you know, the stuff, unfortunately, that happened with Omega and Punk and all those people involved was very unfortunate. But Jeff Hardy's a type of, he's a lovable guy in the back. He's a guy that won't really start a fight, I don't think, with anybody. If anything, he's been always, Alino, been more in a fight with himself to, you know, stay sober and get checked. But I think enough time has passed. I think now you have the Hardys. They're both going to be relatively, I think, healthy. I don't know what Jeff's state is in terms of if he's injured or not. But I think Jeff coming back would help him. And I think it would also help the AEW product because you said it perfectly. Ethan Page has been over for quite some time. And Private Party is another faction and group that I just absolutely love. So you had the Hardys to that mix. That's money.
I like it.
But I think that's it for today. This was a good episode, man. It was about an hour. We talked about the lines for today's hockey game. Talked more about the NBA season. Talked about WWE and The Fiend and Bray Wyatt, whoever the hell he is, coming back. And as well, we talked about AEW being here live in Toronto. with my boy Alino watching it. So with that being said, this is In the Zone, episode 196, signing out.